Would you consider Nightwing to be a bird of prey?
Do you mean the name Nightwing itself?
Sure.
I guess it could be, since it's based on like a Kryptonian mythological bird, right? Because it's Nightwing and Flamebird. I guess maybe yes?
Yeah.
So we should have him in the next movie then, right?
Think of all the butt jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays with Doom Rocket. I'm Jared Jones. Across the table from me is MJ Kramer. Every week, we talk about comics, or at least we try to. This week, I suppose, why not? Let's talk Birds of Prey.
Yes, a timely topic.
It's a movie, though, and I insist that this is a comics podcast. We've dabbled in film before, and we'll dabble today. But to anchor us, we will also be talking about the new DC Black Label release, Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey.
Mm-hmm.
Written by Amanda Connor, Jimmy Palmiotti, illustrated by Amanda Connor yet again.
With colors by our friend Paul Mounts.
That's right, that's right. So, yeah, nice little chit-chat.
Yes.
Tie-ins, corporate synergy.
That makes sense sometimes, you know. It is a big release for this week. So
it is.
It's timely in a couple ways.
And it's also fun to talk about.
Yes.
And we're basically a DC fan podcast at this point anyway.
Not always.
Not always.
Not always. I keep us on the straight and narrow.
That's right. We take them to task sometimes. But anyway, before we get into all of that, MJ, how are you doing today?
I am doing all right. Jones, what about you?
I'm doing just fine. Are you ready for today's new comic book day? Did you read anything? You feeling good about stuff coming out?
I did. I do try to read new books, but a lot of times I don't get around to it, partially just because sometimes we're prepping for the podcast, but I got a chance to read one of the new books coming out today, but we'll talk about it more in the top five.
Oh, all right.
I like it enough to put it in the top five.
Well, that's a nice little tease for things to come.
Yeah. You got to tune in later, guys. Keep on listening.
I presume they listen to the whole thing. Who listens to part of a podcast?
I don't know. I'm just saying they
got maniacs. That's
they got to listen to the whole thing.
Oh, before we get into stuff, I wanted to mention that we got a new hardcover that we want to give away. If you want to find out what that is and how you can enter said drawing, listen all the way to the end of the podcast. See? Brought it back around. So, MJ, news.
News.
Where do you want to begin with news?
I think we can begin with some Marvel stuff.
All right.
That's okay with you. So, you know, the big upcoming crossover event that Marvel's doing this summer, Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Empire.
Not to be confused with the litany of events that are currently running through Marvel.
Yeah,
right
yeah.
Now.
And the other upcoming ones, there's probably like three others. But we have two more tie-in miniseries that got announced.
I'd be tired of events if I were a character in this place. I'd be like, we just did this.
Well, just imagine like the normal humans living in the Marvel Universe. Like, oh no, New York's going to get destroyed again.
If I found out there was a multiverse, I would move Earths. There's always some sort of Skrull invasion. The world's always in peril. I would settle for just the daily bank robber.
I think in the Marvel Universe, you probably don't want to live near any kind of urban area.
Yeah.
Ever at all.
Even when you live out in the boonies, every once in a while, some superhero fisticuff, like, I don't know, Thor knocks the Hulk into your farm, and your barn that your great-granddaddy built that you were born in gets destroyed, and then all of a sudden your farm tanks and the government won't bail you out.
Yeah, how high must taxes be in the Marvel Universe?
Think about that. Like, really think about that. When we have a hurricane, we're dumping billions of dollars into revitalizing areas, or at least we're supposed to anyway. I don't say that. The government actually does that. But in the Marvel Universe, how much money would the government need just to keep America going?
I wonder if they talk about in that old series, Damage Control, that they did.
Mm.
That was about that group that kind of takes just like emergency care and all that stuff after crazy superhero shit happens.
Like, I don't think Tony Stark could just be a billionaire. That wouldn't cut it. You'd have to be a trillionaire in this economy because the inflation would be through the roof.
This is a very interesting topic.
That's what the comic should be about. No, it shouldn't. That'd be boring as sin. Anyway, I digress.
We both digress. Okay. Empire tie-ins.
It's expensive to live in the Marvel Universe. That's what I'm saying.
So we've got two little, tiny little mini series that got announced. Series. I know you hate it when I say series.
It's fine. I can just see the apostrophe at the end of the S. It always drives me nuts. It's fine.
So we already had announced Avengers and Spider-Man tie-ins. Now we have a Thor one and a Squadron Supreme one.
Now, generally, you know my policy. Event tie-ins. But Marvel's been doing a really good job of using this as an impetus to bring in new voices to the Marvel family. And in this case, for the Thor one-shot, they're bringing in Rom V.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Writer of These Savage Shores, about to start a new run on Justice League Dark. He is blowing up. One of the best new writers that comics has, and he's hopping over to Marvel.
And we've got art by Pasquale Ferri, who is very, very good. He did art on Thor like 5-7 years ago and was really good.
Was that when Straczynski was doing it?
I want to say it was after Straczynski, like maybe when Fraction was writing it.
Oh, right. It's 2020.
Yeah.
Never mind.
But I think it will be cool to see him on Thor again. Mm-hmm. And this Thor miniseries is going to be 3 issues long.
Okay.
So they're kind of going by this more of the War of the Realms template, which is doing the shorter tie-in miniseries.
Some of those War of the Realms miniseries did do quite well.
Mm-hmm.
The Punisher one did well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you mentioned how Marvel's been using these tie-ins as kind of a springboard for new talent. Mm-hmm. Last year, they used it to kind of introduce the McElroy brothers.
Which I wouldn't quantify as new voices. They have voice on podcast. I speak weird now.
As far as being in Marvel Comics, they were new voices.
I see.
So it's kind of cool that they're doing this, trying to get people started, get people's names known. So the other one is going to be Empire Squadron Supreme, which is, as we know, it's a team that's got a lot of DC Justice League analogs on it.
It's because it is a Justice League analog.
Yes.
It's not subtle.
Yes. They have been showing up in the Avengers lately, but this 2-issue mini is going to be written by Mark Waid with art by Dio Neves, who is, I don't think I'm familiar with.
Having Mark Waid on this book, there's not one writer out there that knows more about the DC universe that I'm aware of more than Mark Waid. And having Mark Waid, who's worked with all these characters like in Kingdom Come and JLA, now writing Squadron Supreme, the not so subtle analogs to the Justice League. I can't wait to see what his take is.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. He says it's going to put a modern spin on some of the Silver Age of comics' more familiar tropes. I don't know if he means the DC Silver Age tropes, I assume.
And how will this tie into what's going on with Empire?
It doesn't really say.
Empire still about the Kree-Skrull War?
Well, the first issue hasn't come out yet, so we don't really know.
Empire. Is it like a play on words where empires fall and turn to ruin and burn and all that stuff because pyre is fire?
I would assume so.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right, cool. When do these 2 miniseries debuts drop, MJ?
In May. That's all the info we've got is just May.
We'll have more information on those in our May 2020 solicits.
Yes.
That's right, coming up.
That'll be our last episode of the month.
So what's next for news?
Well, we've got some more Marvel news, if that's okay.
Why do you say it like that? I'm not anti-Marvel, despite my bluster.
Well, this one sounds like it might be really cool. We have a new series called The Marvels coming out. This is going to be written by Kurt Busiek, with art by Yildiray Senar, and covers by Alex Ross.
All right, break it down. What's Marvel's all about?
I just got to say first, before we do that, I don't think Marvel should be using the word Marvel or Marvels as often as they have been in the titles for things.
What makes you say that?
Because it's going to confuse the shit out of people. Because they just came out with that tie-in to the old Marvel series. Mm-hmm. It was like the prelude that Alex Ross did the art for.
Then now there's Marvel X.
Yeah, Marvel's X. Now there's going to be this coming out. People aren't really going to know if they tie into each other.
Do you think they really care?
I just think that there's a, dilution of the brand.
Do they care? Like they own over 50% of the market share. What do they care?
That's true.
And not only that, you want to talk about confusion. So here's a bit of the solicits info. Kurt Busiek is back with the biggest, wildest, most sprawling series ever to hit the Marvel Universe, telling stories that span the decades and range from cosmic adventure to intense human drama, from the street level to the cosmic, starring literally anyone from Marvel's very first heroes to the superstars of tomorrow. Isn't that just the Marvel Universe?
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that the experience you get by reading all of the Marvel comics?
Well, they point out that the original Marvel series showed all of these crazy events from the point of, an everyman.
Phil Sheldon, yeah. Yeah. He was the photographer.
An everyman from, the ground level.
Right.
And they point out that this will not be from that point of view. It'll be from the point of view of just...
the superheroes?
Yeah.
Which is everything. Isn't that the comics?
Yeah. Honestly, it's got these beautiful Ross covers, so the that'll probably sell them.
So do a lot of actual Marvel comics. I mean, what is so special about this, aside from getting Kurt Busiek back on a regular Marvel book?
I think getting Kurt Busiek back on a Marvel book is enough to sell it, to be honest. Oh, and another Marvel's tie-in is that Marvel's snapshot thing that Kurt Busiek is kind of overseeing.
Right.
So that's four different titles they've come out with Marvels or Marvel in the title in that way.
It's too much.
Yeah. They'll care if it doesn't sell, and then they'll maybe, hopefully, tone it down a little bit.
They're not going to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not going to do that. All right. So when does Marvel's number one drop, MJ?
It comes out in May. We don't have a price on it yet, but I'm guessing this is going to be at least $4.99 with like a thicker cardstock kind of cover.
I'll see your $4.99 and I'll raise you to a $7. Cardstock cover, oversize debut, Alex Ross cover, Return of Kurt Busiek, $7.99.
I'm sure we will find out when they release the solicits. So stay tuned, y'all. We will talk about it in 2 weeks.
I will wait with bated breath. What is next for news, MJ?
Well, we can hop over to some DC news now. Aren't you happy? Aren't you relieved?
I don't have a bias, despite what people may think.
I know that you like DC.
I like how DC publishes their comics more than how Marvel presently does. The way Marvel does it is a mess, and they overcharge for low-quality printing, and DC has high-quality printing and tries to keep the cost low. And they don't flood the shelves with books.
I, too, appreciate that.
There's not some big conspiracy here. I'm not some DC shill. I'm not getting paid. Anyway, so what's your DC news?
Well, I don't know what I think about this news. So the Joker is getting a new hench person whose name is Punchline. And she seems to, I don't know, be a new take on Harley, maybe?
I mean, clearly it's filling the Harley-shaped hole in Joker's life.
Uh-huh.
The question is that going to be the same paradigm with Punchline? Is Joker and Punchline going to be an item? Or is Punchline just going to be another part of Joker's goons?
Yeah, they haven't really said that yet.
Mm-hmm.
She seems to, at least at this point, have more agency than Harley did at that point in her introduction.
But how does one hold agency over the Joker?
I guess we'll find out if we read these comics, Jared.
James Tynan said on Twitter that Harley and Punchline are going to get into a dust-up at some point. Are you surprised?
A little disappointed.
Yeah.
I don't need to see girls fighting over a boy.
It's the most... I don't know if they're going to be fighting over the Joker, but they are going to be fighting. I mean, they've been positioning Harley to be more of an anti-hero in the DCU. So whatever Joker's up to, because he's got the Joker War coming up. Joker War. Not like the time he was at war with the Riddler.
The War of Jokes and Riddles?
But just Joker War. And I presume that whatever he's got cooking will threaten Harley Quinn, if not directly, then enough to have her intervene.
So she will be debuting as a little cameo appearance in Batman 89.
Mm.
But her actual debut is going to be in Year of the Villain Hell Arisen number 3.
Okay.
It's always funny when they have that like cameo appearance and then actual full appearance.
That's how you goose speculator interest.
I mean, that's how they consider Wolverine's first appearance is 181, but also 180.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you make of Punchline's costume here?
It's fine.
It's designed by Jorge Jimenez, if I'm not mistaken.
I mean, it's funny. It allows for you to show cleavage without her having actually that much skin showing.
Yeah.
So good job on that.
It seems rather uninspired.
Yeah, it's just like a black dress over sort of a purple mesh top and then like clown makeup.
It's like she's going to go to Berlin. Not the city, but the club here in Chicago.
But when they announced that this character would be debuting, both of those two issues that I mentioned have not come out yet. So they have already sold out at the publisher.
Of course.
DC has already announced that they are doing second printings.
Mm-hmm.
So those should be out a week or two after these other issues come out. There's also going to be an Art Germ variant featuring Punchline that's going to be on the cover of Batman 94.
But of course.
And that one comes out May 6th.
Yeah.
So that's probably why they announced all of this in general, because that is going to be in their May solicits.
The question is, who would put up a Joker shit for 10 seconds? I mean, unless you're terrified of him and you're in his thrall, I would get it. But Punchline seems pretty confident and or competent. So what's the deal?
Maybe she has loftier ambitions. She's dealing with it while she climbs a ladder.
Joker's had clowns like that literally and figuratively, in his employ over the years, and they tend to eke themselves out.
Well, I can only hope that this is someone who is going to rise above that and beat him at his own game.
I'm all about new characters.
I just wish they would have named for something other than Punchline.
It fits.
It just reminds one that his previous girlfriend, Harley, was a punching bag. So I don't know that they need to name her Punchline.
It does evoke Punch and Judy now that I think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if that was intentional.
I don't know. It's a little unsettling, but I don't know. I trust in James to deal with this correctly.
All right.
So we'll see how it hashes out.
Once again, when is Punchline expected to debut?
She has that cameo debut in Batman 89, which comes out February 19th. And then she has her full debut the next week in Year of the Villain, Hell Arisen 3.
Great. Any other news, MJ?
That's all I got.
All right. Well, I feel like Punchline is a nice segue into the topic of the week.
Yeah.
So, MJ, how do you want to do this? Do you want to do the movie first or do you want to do the comic first?
I thought talking about the movie might be better first.
Okay. All right, yeah. Sure. Birds of Prey and the Fabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
Fantabulous.
Fantabulous? What did I say?
Fabulous.
It's fine. That title, Warner Brothers is convinced, is what kept people from seeing the movie over the weekend, even though plenty of people saw the movie, but that's a different story. And so they've changed it to Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey.
Yeah, just Harley Quinn : Birds of Prey.
Oh, gotcha.
I can sort of understand that. If theaters are going to abbreviate that long-ass subtitle.
Which they surely will.
Yeah. People aren't necessarily going to know what Birds of Prey is. It's not exactly a known property the same way like Justice League is.
And they would be chewing on the words fantabulous and emancipation right on top of each other.
Oh no, so many syllables.
Oh no.
I can understand them wanting to do that, but I think if they were going to do that, maybe do that initially and not change it after the first week of release.
It's a great title.
Yeah.
But it is a mouthful.
Yeah. I think it's pretty cute.
Mm-hmm.
I would start with saying that I adored it, and it was incredibly fun.
It was a lot of fun, and I'm a tough sell.
You are.
Especially with DC movies. They're often done so poorly. But as far as course correction goes, I mean, let's look at the track record so far. Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Shazam, and now Birds of Prey. All of them perfectly fine. Some more of a mess than others.
What's crazy is that this is the 8th DCEU movie, and it is the first one that is rated R.
Dawn of Justice had an R-rated version. Suicide Squad had an R-rated version, right?
But those weren't what came out in the theaters.
I mean, Dawn of Justice was right there.
There weren't as many F-bombs in Dawn of Justice.
Batman pulls a knife out of his body and then turns it around in his hand with his blood on it and stabs the guy who stabbed him with it.
Oh, come on. You know the American movie-going audience doesn't care about violence. They only care if there's bad words and boobs.
Yeah. We are prudes.
There are not any boobs in this movie.
Yeah. It's not sexualized at all. I think that has a lot to do with there being a female director, a female screenwriter.
Kathy Yan and Christina Hodson.
That's right. They keep the eye on the prize, which is plot. This is a very plot-driven story.
And they keep that eye on the prize, not utilizing the male gaze.
That's right. That's right. It's true.
Well, it's nice that we didn't have Harley wearing sequined booty shorts for most of the movie.
They even make fun of that a couple times in the movie. I appreciated that.
Yeah, because you can't think that having sequins on the inside of your thighs can feel very good.
Especially when you're kicking and fighting all the time.
Yeah.
You know what's funny about this movie? It does a better job of establishing Harley as a force to be reckoned with than they ever did with her in Suicide Squad.
Now, this is partially because they brought in Chad Stahelski, who directed John Wick and has been doing tons of really great stunt work in Hollywood for like 20 years now. They brought him in to help coordinate the fights and be like a second unit director or something.
Well, whatever he did it very well because the fight scenes are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene where Harley infiltrates GCPD. I forget what she gets.
She's trying to get Cassandra.
Oh, that's right. Cassandra Cain. And the raid sequence is just beautiful. It's like, mwah, mwah, beautiful. And then the final sequence, which is about a half hour long, there's a lot of steady cam wide shots where we can actually soak in all the fighting, because a lot of the time it's just like heavy cuts, shaky cam. The opposite of what Christopher Nolan did in the Batman movies is what we get here.
It also brings to mind like the craziness of the Schumacher movies, that final scene.
Oh, yeah.
It's wild and crazy and just like retro carnival goofiness.
I've been saying this for years. Those movies have aged very well. If you were to make Batman and Robin today, maybe change like a couple of things to contemporize it, that movie would do incredibly well. It would piss off the right people also, I would say.
Would you want to keep the nipples on the bat suit?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I never had a problem with the nipples on the bat suit. It's just a thing that people can zero in and focus on and direct their hate towards, like justifying their hate. There's no objective problem with having nipples on the bat suit.
It's a little silly.
Yes. The movie is silly. The movie is supposed to be silly.
There are some people who would fight you tooth and nail that Batman can never be silly. Batman's not a silly character.
I would win. I would win that argument. I would point to the show Batman Brave and the Bold, and I would rest my case.
Or the 1966 Batman show. Yeah. I mean, heck.
Batman could be whatever the hell you want him to be. But let's not talk about Batman, because this movie certainly doesn't. Which is surprising, actually, because there are a lot of moments that happen in this film that you'd think would attract Batman.
Well, I was I was going to ask you what you thought about so much of this movie taking place in Gotham during the daytime.
I liked it. Because that's the one way that you can get around the Batman question, because Gotham City's Batman City. But Batman doesn't operate during the daytime.
I don't know if it was because everything took place during the day or just because they decided to kind of pull the focus away from this. But it didn't feel like the typical Gotham City. We didn't see any other villains at all.
Yeah.
There wasn't much mention of any other, you know, costumed criminals. Except for the Joker.
Joker gets brought up a lot, which is distracting, because you can tell that maybe at one point when they were drafting the first bits of story for this film, the Joker was probably Black Mask.
I don't think so.
It would make more sense.
I think it makes more sense to not have Joker in it at all, because it's ostensibly a breakup movie. It's about Harley Quinn having her Joker broke up, and this is her finding her own feet.
Don't get me wrong. I'm happy with how this movie turned out. I would have enjoyed it more if it was like a Birds of Prey reckoning against the Joker. Like, because he's like, they broke up. Joker now sees her as a liability. He wants to get rid of her. And he starts directing all his resources against her. And she has to fight back. This is pretty much the movie as we have it. And not only that, Roman Sionis, as he is depicted in this film, is not how he is in the comics.
I love how he's depicted in here, though.
He's very Joker-esque. They can't go 10 minutes without bringing him up.
It's more from a relationship standpoint than from a villain standpoint. Like, Harley is getting over being in this awfully codependent, abusive relationship.
Right.
And it's about that. It's about her, you know, becoming an independent person and surrounding herself with these new friends. I think that is the best possible decision they could have done. And it is, like you said, it's not like a typical decision that you would think DC would make, Warner Brothers would make.
Not the most profitable one, for sure.
Yeah. Which we can get more into later, I guess.
But the big thing about focusing on Harley so much is that it does give the rest of the characters in this movie the short shrift. The only character that kind of survives being cast in the shadow of Harley Quinn is Renee Montoya, played by Rosie Perez, who is awesome in this movie. And to an extent, Journey Smollett-Bell as Black Canary.
I would say that Black Canary, she's good. Renee did well in this. I was worried about Rosie Perez playing that part, because I thought, like, she's older than the other gals they've cast. Mm. I'm not sure how well that's going to work. And Rosie Perez is
Rosie Perez. She's a firecracker. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't see that meshing with Renee Montoya. And it did.
It did.
It worked so great.
I could see a Gotham Central TV show, her Renee Montoya.
Yeah.
That'd be really cannot, cool. However, see her as the Question.
Yeah. I was thinking that, too.
Yeah.
I didn't think that they gave Huntress really enough of a...
She's not in this movie. Her backstory is a part of the plot. She's a joke. She's a recurring joke in the film, because Helena Bertinelli returns to Gotham to get revenge on the people that killed her parents, her mafia parents, and she's using a crossbow. So the papers dub her the crossbow killer, but she wants to be the Huntress. So it's hard to take her seriously.
It's great once we actually do get to know her and see her more, but that's not till the very third act of the movie.
Yeah,
the
movie's almost over by the time she shows up.
Yeah, but she's really good in the part.
The pacing in this movie's odd.
It's structured real weird.
Doesn't really help it, because it spends more time on Harley Quinn that it forgets that, oh yeah, there are other characters in this movie we have to deal with too. And so they put that into the movie. Let's rewind and see the passage of time through the context of these characters. And it's like, okay, so we're going to do the first half of the movie again.
So much of this movie is flashback.
There's a lot of Suicide Squad's really chaotic structure in this movie, and I don't think that's to its benefit. It's the characters being better written in this movie that save it.
And it still uses the structure better than Suicide Squad did, because Suicide Squad was just so bad.
But we still went through like 7 songs before we got to the title card, which is no, stop doing this movies.
It does.
A movie is not its soundtrack.
But the soundtrack is really good.
It didn't have any La Tigra in it. TKO? during a fight scene would have been a showstopper for me.
I understand. And it did have a very, like, a slow, moody cover of Hit Me With Your Best Shot towards the end.
Yeah.
That was a little, that made me cringe a little bit.
Yeah. So let's talk about Roman Sionis here. Crime Lord in Gotham, clearly operating in the shadow of the Joker, is clearly afraid of the Joker, as is practically everybody in Gotham City. So when they break up, Harley Quinn and Joker, I mean, Harley is all of a sudden considered to be expendable by everybody.
It was pretty adorable that the way they decided to have Harley change her relationship status was by blowing up Ace Chemicals.
Yeah. How did you feel about Ewan McGregor as Black Mask?
I thought he was delightful. He was chewing scenery like crazy.
He's definitely game in the movie.
Yeah.
For sure.
He seems very queer-coded, though, and so was Zaz. And it's funny because they were both asked whether or not these characters were, in fact, gay. And they both kind of joked about it, and they were like, yeah, we guess maybe.
It's in there.
Yeah. It seems as though they were playing it that way, but it's not actually written into the script, so.
It definitely fits with how these characters aren't really exactly how they appear in the comics at all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which goes into their costuming, which they don't really look like the characters they're representing in the comics either, which I suppose is fine because these are really workable characters. They work great. But I didn't feel like I was watching a superhero movie, for sure.
Well, this also is before any of them, like, really become superheroes. Like, when we see them become what they are, it's at the end. And their versions of the costumes, like you said, don't necessarily look like what we're used to.
Oh, the costumes at the end were terrible.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
They're real bad.
The one character that is changed the most to the point where you have to wonder why they even use the name is Cassandra Cain.
Yeah, I'm puzzled by her presence in this movie because that's just not her at all.
Yeah, I think they just wanted to have a character with a known name be in the movie. So they were like, who's a teenage girl? Cassandra Cain.
Outside of people who read comics, who the hell knows who Cassandra Cain is? I ask you.
I do think a lot of the times when they're casting these movies, they do want that comic book cachet. They do want to be able to say, this is this character and this is this character. But man, I wish they would have changed.
Yeah, just change the name. Because her presence in the movie reminded me of that kid in Deadpool 2. Did you ever see Deadpool 2?
Yes.
Okay, so you remember him?
Yeah.
The whole plot kind of hinges on him. Everyone's after him. Deadpool has to protect him. I'm not saying Birds of Prey is Deadpool 2, but it's not far removed from Deadpool 2.
I think Deadpool 2 is a little bit more like Deadpool 1, except that it's not about a couple getting together. It's about a couple post-breakup.
Yeah, but Deadpool 2 is not a breakup necessarily.
Well, it's a little different.
Deadpool does lose his girlfriend in Deadpool 2 and has to deal with it.
Yeah.
So there's similarities.
I just thought the freshness of it reminded me more of the first movie than the second.
Yeah. It's the energy that keeps this movie going. And its sense of humor, which is sharp and smarter than I would expect any spinoff from Suicide Squad to be.
There was a little tiny flash on the screen, blink if you miss it, tidbit there that said that one of the reasons that Sionis hates Harley is because she voted for Bernie.
Yeah.
So Harley's a Bernie bro. It was little tiny bits like that, that just constant little giggles. They just keep you on your feet, keep your brain rushing the endorphins in.
It doesn't leave much for drama. Like, I don't get close to these characters in this movie.
What about when Harley loses her egg sandwich?
I mean, yeah, that's funny.
But the drama was there too.
Yes, it's framed as dramatic, which is the joke. But like, I don't feel like I connected with any of these characters beyond wanting to enjoy their adventure and see them all the way through. I didn't want any of them to get hurt. And I genuinely felt upset in moments where it seemed like Sionis's goons might do something awful to them. But beyond that,
I did connect with the characters, especially with Harley. And I really appreciated how they let her be smart in this movie more so than we've seen her. And a lot of times the comics will show this. She, you know, has a PhD. She is a doctor. She might have thrown that all away for a crazy clown man. But she is smart and she is able to give little tiny psychoanalyses to people. And it just comes off so adorable.
Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn, I would equate to Christopher Reeve as Superman. It's a perfect union of actor and character, and it works beautifully. Black Canary, for me, is my favorite character in the film. Once you get rid of Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn, because I feel like her character was given at least adequate amount of depth, because you actually do follow her through a good chunk of the story. She starts as a lounge singer for Black Mask, and then she becomes a driver, and she becomes involved with some of the more violent exploits of Victor Zsasz, and Victor Zsasz was a creepy character. but she finally comes around to becoming a full-fledged ass kicker. And we discover she does have superpowers.
Yes, and she is the only one of them with superpowers. Mm-hmm. That is one of the best things about this movie, is that all of these ladies, they might be kicking ass, they are not using powers to do so. They are just beating shit up. It's awesome to see.
All right, so MJ, at the tail end of our movie conversation of Birds of Prey, what are your final thoughts?
I adored it. I can understand the criticisms about it, but I still loved it, and it was one of the funnest times I've had at the movies in a while. What about you?
I agree. It's a hell of a lot of fun. It's got a lot of energy and a lot of spirit, and it's kind of a mess, but it's a beautiful mess because breakups are supposed to be messy. It's supposed to be chaotic. Whenever you come out the other end of a long relationship, your life is a shambles, and Harley Quinn's life is a fucking shambles in this movie. And it didn't bother me that it was rated R. It bothered me that it was rated R because I know that they're limiting the amount of money that they can take in. But the movie earns that rating by not necessarily being cussy. It is certainly that. But it does deal with more mature themes, and it does have consequences to its violence. It felt like a grown-up movie.
Yeah.
But a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I think it upstages Deadpool in that regard.
But you mentioned that the R rating might have like limited its box office take. And it seems like it did, because it only made $33 million domestically for its opening weekend.
Yeah, it's not a lot.
But it did make $81 million worldwide, which almost covers its entire budget. It was only like $84 million to make.
But studios spend so much more than just their production budget. There's distribution, there's advertising.
But yeah, saying that it bombed the first weekend is kind of a misnomer.
But what kills me about this conversation about Birds of Prey's box office, not our conversation, but the discourse on it, is that it turns everyone into an armchair box office analyst all of a sudden. Since when do you people fucking care about that stuff?
Since they looked at Box Office Mojo.
Get out of here. It's one thing I keep saying, the internet ruined movies. This is one of those moments where everyone turns into like this quasi would be expert on every facet of cinema. Whenever a movie comes out, they're quick to point out all its foibles, like they went to film school or something. It's like, get out of here.
But we all know how much the success of a movie and any possible sequels will hinge on its box office. So we kind of, you know, have to dwell on it.
This week, it's up against Sonic the Hedgehog. I think Birds of Prey will do okay.
But Sonic the Hedgehog, not rated R.
That's true. You got a point. All right, MJ. I would love to continue with the film, but we got a comic to talk about.
Another one that is also rated R.
Expertly timed with the release of the film, Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey, the new release from DC Black Label.
Which, funny enough, has the same title as they changed Birds of Prey to.
That's right. Written by Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti. Illustrated by Amanda Connor and Paul Mounts. Letters by John J. Hill. I loved it.
Yeah?
Whenever Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti get together and work on a script, there's just so much to it. There's a lot of moving parts. Everything is paid attention to. There's setup and payoff. And with a character like Harley Quinn, it's appropriate to have that sense of comedic timing. And this book has it. It has the same energy as the film. It has the same potty mouth as the film and the same level of violence. It is a perfect tie-in comic, I would say.
You can tell that they are relishing the fact that they are able to be rated R here. Mm-hmm. This is rated 17 up because it's a Black Label book. And
it's naughty.
It's very naughty. There's no boobs because apparently Black Label still can't show nudity. But you can tell that they would have showed some boobs if they could.
Yeah. They try show, in a couple
yeah,
places.
There are topless right? characters who have boobs that are mostly covered by other things.
And Harley has a dream sequence where her and Ivy are on an island with Superman as their butler. Mm-hmm. And Ivy's wearing these flower pasties, but the bud at the center, they're pink. So it looks like nipples.
And Harley's wearing starfish over her boobs. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cute.
And then there's a member of the gang of Harleys who's just naked.
Yeah.
For no reason. They don't even bring it up.
Well, they were all in their pajamas. They had all gotten woken up and ran up to the roof.
Yeah, they were sleeping.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the plot. Not the same plot as the film.
Oh, not at all.
But still, in a way, deals with Harley's relationship with the Joker. And will do even more so in future issues, apparently.
And they do bring in some of the characters that we see in Birds of Prey, where we see Huntress coming in, but it's actually Huntress wearing her actual costume.
Right. Other characters that feature in the film show up here. They're all on the cover. Renee Montoya, Black Canary, Cassandra Cain, as we said, Huntress. And then this little stuffed beaver that's also in the film.
Yes. That beaver, Bernie, is an introduction that Connor and Palmiotti made when they first started the character. All of the stuff in this comic are things that they have introduced during their very, very long run on the character.
That brings the question, because this is a Black Label book. Typically, this is not an incontinuity type thing. Is this a continuation of incontinuity Harley Quinn stories, or is it because we're dealing with Harley Quinn, it doesn't fucking matter?
It probably doesn't matter, because like the Deadpool comics, Harley is a little bit, you know, breaking the fourth wall, aware of the fact that she's in a comic.
Right.
Bernie talks to her, but it's really in her head, the same way that Deadpool will often have multiple different designed word bubbles to show his different random personalities. I don't think this is in continuity, just because I don't think they're going to ever count something that has the F word in it as continuity. But I think it's close enough that you can kind of consider it to be, you know, a continuation of their run.
Like the film, it deals with a breakup, or kind of a separation of sorts, between Harley Quinn and her on-again, off-again girlfriend, Poison Ivy. Harley fucked up, as Harley Quinn is wont to do, but she fucked up big this time. Like, Poison Ivy had, like, this little island getaway for them. They were going to spend a weekend there and just enjoy the sun.
Harley wanted it to be longer than a weekend, though.
Yeah, so she didn't drop anchor for their boat, and it sails off, and they're stuck there.
Yep.
And they have to ration their provisions. And of course, Harley is so distraught that Ivy's angry at her that she eats all the food. What's that term when you eat when you're distressed?
When you binge eat?
Binge eat, yeah. And so they're out of food. They're out of everything. And Ivy's so pissed. They get rescued by, I guess, friends of theirs that steal a military helicopter.
Yes, that's Cy Borgman, also introduced by Palmiotti and Connor. And I think in the cartoon, he's voiced by Jason Alexander. That's what I've heard.
The animated series on DC Universe, really?
From what I have heard.
I'm not going to watch that cartoon.
I kind of want to watch it now.
It came out before the movie. It came out before this book, and it's also R-rated. And just listening to them curse, even though they're in the Tim-style animation almost, it throws me off.
Too much dissonance for you?
Yeah, it's like when you curse in Star Trek. It doesn't work. There's too much dissonance there.
Jared doesn't like the bad words.
Fuck that. I curse all the time. It's not a matter of that. Gauge what you're working with and ask yourself. It's like when your mom chastises you for cursing. Do those curse words add to what you're trying to say?
Ah, are they relevant to the moment?
Yeah. Well, more relevant to the property, I would say. Mm. But, you know. Anyway, back to the book. So the whole plot hinges on Harley losing her building. I guess she owned a building?
Well, she owns two buildings, and one of the main one that they take away is like a motel.
It's called like the Carina Marina?
No, it's like the something Seaman.
The Dreamin' Seaman.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. All right.
Harley lives on Coney Island, and it was like a very old hotel on Coney Island. This is, again, all stuff that they introduced in the Palmiotti Connor run. I kind of think that it might be best if you have read a lot of their run, because I've at least read the couple first volumes of each of the times they restarted it. So I'm kind of familiar with what they did with the character. And I think if you just jump in here without knowing that, they introduce so much stuff that it does make sense, but they throw a lot at you.
I was able to keep up. I haven't read too much Harley Quinn comics, but I was able to keep up with this. I just presume with the clip that they keep this book at, like, you have to keep up or you're just not going to enjoy it. But that's what I enjoy about Connor and Palmiotti, is that they have timing. Their pages are filled. Like, there's a lot of panels and there are a lot of word balloons, but each character has their own personality and they bounce off each other. And Harley is such a firecracker that any situation that you throw her into, it's going to go Looney Tunes almost immediately. And that's what happens in this book. It's great.
And the comic being magazine-sized means that the word balloons don't take up as much space as they would otherwise.
They would otherwise, right. And sometimes they can get a little overboard with the dialogue.
But it's always in that goofy-ass accent that Harley has. Mm-hmm. I mean, they both lived in New York for like a super long time, so they have that handle on Harley's accent down so well.
They sure do.
And it's fun to hear Harley just going on and on in that goofy accent of hers, plus being able to say the F word.
Yep. So Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey, book one from DC Black Label. What would you score this out of 10?
I would say, and just based on the fact of loving Amanda Connor and Paul Mounce's art, it's so good to see them doing interiors again. And we even see Power Girl again.
Yep.
I would say 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10? Yeah, I agree. That's a solid 8 out of 10. It's a good debut. It's a fun book. And I think it's, again, a perfect tie-in for this movie. So if you've just seen the movie and you're still jazzed and you're still buzzing from it, like, you have two options. You either go see the movie again or you go to your local comic book store and say, give me Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey. Also, here's my ID because this is rated R. Yeah.
And it is $6. Like I mentioned, it's magazine sized, but there's so much story in this that it's worth the extra couple dollars.
I agree. All right, MJ, you ready for the top five?
I am. What about you?
I mean, that's why I brought it up. All right, MJ, this week I've got the three again.
Yes, you do.
Because you hate comics. And you've got the two, so I'll just start us off if that's okay with you.
That's fine with me. You had more you were excited about, so we can highlight more.
I wanted to kick this off with a non-DC or Marvel debut.
Yeah, we've been loading up the DC and Marvel this week.
We sure have. I'm going to take it over to Image Comics for Tartarus, number one. Written by Johnny Christmas, art by Jack T. Cole, and lettered by Jim Campbell. What a debut. I had the privilege of interviewing Johnny Christmas on Doom Rocket about this book in the lead up to the release, so I got to read it well in advance. Reading it in PDF is one thing. Reading it in a collected book like this is quite another. This is a beautiful presentation and a beautiful book. It deals with mothers and daughters. It deals with legacy and destiny. Bullet Train synopsis is that a young girl finds out that her mother is, in fact, the monster the powers of B have warned them against all their lives. She was a revolutionary, quite violent one at that, and is presumed dead, mysteriously disappeared about 20, 30 years ago, and her daughter has now come of age, and she's a well-conditioned cog in the machinery of the establishment. And when she finds out who her mother is, well. And the art by Jack T. Cole, how can I describe this? Mobius?
Really?
I highly recommend it. If you're looking for something new and exciting from Image, Tartarus number one is the book for you. It's out this week.
One thing I want to mention about that book, though, is that it is $5.99, but it is super thick. It's at least like double the normal size of a comic.
It's 44 pages long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would say, even though we're asking you to kind of dig a little deeper into the pockets this week, these books that we're recommending are really good.
Oh, yeah. Cooper agrees. Cooper's all about Tartarus. He's like, read that shit. MJ, what's first for you?
Well, first for me, I'm going to not do a Marvel and DC book as well. The book that I'm doing is from Boom Studios.
I love how we're saying this, but you know the DC books are coming, right?
Yeah. But we're trying to highlight something other than Marvel and DC. That's all we've talked about this week. Alienated number one. This is a new debut series from Boom Studios. They've been doing really great on the new debuts lately. This one's written by Simon Spurrier, illustrated by Chris Wildgoose, colored by Andre May, lettered by Jim Campbell. And this is just a cute story about a bunch of outcast teenagers in high school who happen to come across this freaky glowing egg-like thing in the woods. It kind of sort of gives them this telepathic connection, and craziness ensues by the end of the issue.
As it must.
Yes.
Yeah.
It also has a really amazing cover by Jamie McKelvey that I would recommend grabbing because it looks really good. The other covers are really great too. Mm. But I love Jamie McKelvey's art. It's just my fave. Alienated number one, a brand new debut from Boom. Go check it out. What's your next pick, Jones?
My next pick, DC.
What?
It's a DC book. But I want to save the best for last, so I'm going to.
Okay.
Green Lantern, season two, number one. Oh my God, this book. This book is everything I want from Cosmic DC. It's Hal Jordan floating through space, being the top cop in the Green Lantern Corps. And he's gone through some shit in the first season and through Green Lantern Black Stars, if you haven't read it. And now he's back in his bona fide greens in Green Lantern season two.
Cooper was excited there as well. Did you hear him?
Written by Grant Morrison, illustrated by Liam Sharp, who is doing amazing work on this book. Colored by Steve Aleef, letters by Tom Orzechowski. If you've been keeping up with this book, you already know how good it is. If you haven't yet, volumes one and two of season one are out now in trade and hardcover. Don't miss out.
Can you just hop onto this one without reading those?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can. Although a lot of what happens in season one and Black Stars factors into a lot of where everyone's at in this book, including the Guardians of the Universe, who are important players in this season. So, you know, maybe do a little homework. The worst thing that happens is that you read a really good comic book.
And it's not that much to catch up with because it's only 12 issues of the first season and then three of the Black Star series,
that's right?
Right.
Cooper, come here.
Well, if Cooper would let me finish, I have another pick.
Yeah, go for it.
My pick is also another DC book.
Mm-hmm, that's what I thought.
So this is Terrifics number 25. Oh boy, it's an anniversary issue.
Oversized. I think it's 30 pages.
Yeah, it's longer than normal. And all of the ads are all the way at the back. So
oh
you don't
God.
Interrupt the middle of the book.
Why doesn't DC do that all the time?
Well, the reason they did it here is because this is a choose-your-own-adventure comic. I am absolutely delighted that they did something like this. Squirrel Girl did a Choose Your Own Adventure issue.
There was You Are Deadpool.
That was four issues of a series.
Al Ewing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am so excited that DC did this. It is written by Gene Luen Yang, the ongoing series writer. We've got interior art by Dan Mora here.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, it's the first time he's been doing DC interiors. He's done lots of covers.
Dan Mora needs to do a DC book. He just does. I know he's busy with Boom, but oh my God, he is the perfect DC artist.
I would guess by seeing him doing interiors in this that his Boom contract must be up. So maybe we'll see him doing more Big Two stuff.
Well, he'll still be doing Once in Future, presumably, unless they put a new artist on it.
I wonder. I guess we'll find out when they solicit more. But it's colored by Ivan Placencia, lettered by Tom Napolitano. I mean, I think saying that it is a Choose Your Own Adventure Terrifics comic is enough of a selling point for you to go and get it.
And that Dan Mora art.
Yes. Go and get it. It's $4.99. Again, sorry we're recommending all these super expensive things, but they're worth the extra bucks, I promise.
They really are.
So what is your last pick for the week, Jones?
My last pick is a graphic novel from Black Mask Studios.
Oh.
That's right. Loud by Maria Lovett.
Oh, she's your fave.
She is one of my favorites. As an artist, she stands alone. As a writer, she is an up-and-coming voice. She's currently doing Heartbeat through Boom Studios, which I would also recommend. She most recently illustrated Faithless with Brian Azzarello. Season 2 of that is coming out soon. But in the meantime, Loud, which has been in the works for a very long time.
A lot of Black Mask's stuff got very, very delayed over the past year or so. This is finally seeing the light of day. I'm so excited.
Loud is definitely worth the wait. A lot of it is without dialogue.
That's cool.
Maria Lovett, if she knows one thing, she knows how to frame a sequence because she loves cinematography. She loves the study of film, and she puts that stuff into her work. The synopsis for Loud, for those who don't know, the Loud nightclub, a latecomer stripper, a pissed waitress, a hitman couple, a suspension bondage performer, a pregnant teenager, a clan of vampires, a pedophile, a lesbian junkie, a divorcing middle-aged woman, a sadistic dominatrix, and many other souls in search of love, drugs, and blood converge at the hottest club in town on a night that none will ever forget if they survive. Come on.
That's a lot. That is a lot.
Oh, yes. That's a lot going on there and a lot to unpack. But Maria Lovett has impeccable taste, and her aesthetic is never not on point. Loud is out. Go get it. It's $16.99, but it's a hardcover, 96 pages. You are not going to enjoy this. Does that make sense? Does that
come out right? A double negative means that you will enjoy it.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, cool. And with that, we close out our top five most anticipated issues of the week. Every week, we take to social media to ask you guys a pressing question on our minds. And this week's question, have you seen Birds of Prey yet? What did you think about it? And give us your capsule review. We got a few answers here.
Yeah.
MJ, go ahead and take it away.
All right. Over on Twitter, at Rick Fuss says, overall, I enjoyed it, but not enough to own a copy. I thought Margot as Harley and Journey as Black Canary carried the film. Roman Sionis was my least favorite part, and I dreaded every time he and his stupid, stupid RS monogrammed gloves were on screen.
What? I love those gloves. I want those gloves.
Wouldn't you want yours to say JJ, though? Mr. J?
Maybe not so ostentatious. On Twitter still, Russ Burlingame at Russ Burlingame said, a fun movie with great pacing and compelling characters. Great pacing? What the hell are you talking about, Russ? That's fine.
At Scott Longpre on Twitter says, I really enjoyed it. A little uneven in character balance, but such a fun movie and a welcome turn for most of DC's movies, save for Wonder Woman and Aquaman. Mm. Margot Robbie was an expected delight, and Ewan McGregor was a whirling dervish of gleeful villainy.
Ooh, nice. Zach Parkerson at GoCastZach on Twitter said, it's great to see DC letting the directors be the guiding force instead of overbearing corporate oversight. I want comic book movies of all shapes, sizes, and tones. Happy to see that begin to happen. A man can only take so many CGI slugfests. Mm-hmm. What's ironic about that statement is that DC let Zack Snyder do whatever the hell he wanted with Man of Steel and Dawn of Justice, and those were garish CGI slugfests. So be careful what you ask for, Zach.
Just need to be choosy in the director choice. Mm-hmm. Katie Schenkel at Just Plain Tweets on Twitter said, loved it. Exactly the kind of movie I was hoping it would be.
Ilana Levin at Ilana_Brooklyn on Twitter said, gleefully violent and funny action movie with John Wick level fight choreography, all about women waging cathartic violence on abusive men, with a great soundtrack and costumes. The whole theater laughed and cheered for diverse women, including queer women, kicking ass, being hot, and supporting each other. To my fellow BOP comics fans, many of the birds are different from the characterization in the comics, but their relationships with each other are so true to the spirit of the comics that the change doesn't bother me. The themes of the comics are alive in this movie, and Elena is the host of the Graphic Policy Radio podcast, which you can find on Apple Podcasts or any other podcatchers. If you like Casual Wednesdays, I got a feeling you're going to enjoy Graphic Policy Radio as well. Make sure to check that out. Elena is currently taping her own Birds of Prey episode, and that should drop on Friday.
Okay.
So yes, please check that out.
I'll have to look it up. On Twitter still, Ryan Lucchese at RDDJ623 says, I did. I loved it. Punk rock Lisa Frank vibes, creepy villains, a choose your family, grow into your power story, and killer unique action sequences. More Harley than Birds of Prey, but with Margot at the helm, I'm cool with that. She stuns as Harley Quinn.
We got time for one more, MJ. Take it away.
All right. At DJ Patrick Reed on Twitter says, it was everything I loved about the Deadpool movies and the new Charlie's Angels at the same time, but with the design channeling the best of the post-Batman 89 comic movie aesthetic.
So now that we're here at the Back Matter, MJ, I wanted to talk about our giveaway.
Yay!
Yeah. And if you want to enter into the drawing for said giveaway, here is what you do. You head over to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. We don't care which. Leave us a review.
A five-star review?
Yeah, stamp it with 5 stars. And if you do that between now and our solicits episode at the end of the month, we will enter you into the drawing. We write your name down on a piece of paper. We throw it into a hat. And then we draw it out, and that person stands to win MJ. Well, just tell them.
Mage, the Hero Discovered hardcover. This is by Matt Wagner. Yes, Cooper. This is by Matt Wagner. This is one of his seminal series that really made him. And if you've ever wanted to, like, dig in to Matt Wagner's original stuff, this is the best place to do it. It is a very thick book. There's a ton of comics in this hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it can be yours if you just head over to Apple Podcasts or Stitcher and leave us a 5-star review.
Yes. Yes. Please do.
We're going to be doing drawings all year long. So if you want in on this, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, whatever, whenever.
Yeah. But before the solicits episode.
That's right. That's right. And that's it. That's all the time we have for this week's Casual Wednesdays. Need more of this dweeby little podcast in your life? Check out our episode archive over on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever. Just rate, follow, subscribe, whatever you want to do. Just tell us how we're doing. Or click Casual Wednesdays over on doomrocket.com. New episodes every Wednesday afternoon. And while you're at it, look us up on Twitter. I'm at @JaredJones_. MJ, where can they find you?
I am at @MollyJane_K.
So until the day Harley gets that damn egg breakfast sandwich, I'm Jared. That's MJ. And from all of us here at DoomRocket.com, have a great new comic book day. I just realized she did get that sandwich.
She did.
Spoilers for Birds of Prey.
But holy heck, that sandwich made me hungry.
Let's go eat.
Okay.